Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, June 29th. With us now, Dr. Lena Wen, Washington Post columnist, former Baltimore Health Commissioner, and George Washington University professor, who's given us so much medical and public health insight during the pandemic and so many things to think about from her opinion writing. Today, we'll talk about the Delta variant, a question about booster shots from people who were vaccinated in January, and Dr. Wen's column arguing that COVID vaccines should be an urgent priority for young children. Dr. Wen, we always appreciate it. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure to join you.
Can we start on the Delta variant? It's more transmissible than any previous one and is causing new outbreaks in the U.S. as around the world. What are some of the things you're seeing first in this country?
Well, let's talk about the transmissibility of the Delta variant, which is key to why we're so worried about it. So the Alpha variant, the B117, the one that originated in the UK, already displaced all the other variants here in the US because it was about 60% more transmissible than the other variants. The Delta variant, the one originating from India, actually is 60% more transmissible than that Alpha variant. So it is now 99% of all the variants in the UK itself is now well over 20% of all the variants here in the US. There are also some studies that show that the Delta variant causes more severe illness, increases the likelihood of hospitalization. And I certainly am very concerned about this. I mean, we are seeing surges and localized outbreaks in parts of the country that have low rates of vaccination. And I think at this point, people have two choices. You get vaccinated or you are very likely and at high risk for contracting the coronavirus, in particular with the Delta variant, becoming the predominant variant here in the U.S. very quickly.
I read that in Israel, with high vaccination rates of the Pfizer vaccine, half the new Delta variant cases in a recent outbreak are among vaccinated people, though very few among those vaccinated with cases are serious cases. But they've reimposed indoor masking rules in a country that's been one of the biggest vaccination success stories. What would you say the lessons are from Israel regarding the Delta variant?
Right. I think it's important for us to take away the right lessons and not the wrong lessons, because I think there might be the temptation to look at what's happening in Israel and other countries with high vaccination rates that still have surges and say, well, then what's the point of vaccination? The vaccine clearly doesn't work. Well, actually, even against the Delta variant, the vaccines that we have here in the U.S., in particular, we have data for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine, maybe the Johnson & Johnson too, but at least for Pfizer and Moderna, it appears that those vaccines are very effective against the Delta variant as well, especially against preventing severe disease, which is the outcome that we most care about. We care about whether we are prevented from getting such severe illness that we end up hospitalized or dying from COVID-19. We also know that getting the vaccine substantially reduces our likelihood of passing on the virus to others. Now, the Delta variant appears that it probably is in people in larger quantities, and that's why it's transmitted more easily. But getting vaccinated still substantially reduces that viral load. And so I hope the right lesson is that vaccination is still our best and only way out of the pandemic, and also that we need to have these other public health tools at our ready, including the tool of reimposing indoor mask mandates, which I really hope that people in this country, I think there is this tendency in the U.S. to think that, well, the pandemic is behind us. It's really not, especially for those who are unvaccinated. But I hope that people remember that even if you are vaccinated, there's still a small chance that you could contract COVID-19 and pass it on to others. But also that the more COVID is in your community, the more likely you are to be at risk. And that's why making sure that we still have those tools of reimposing indoor mask mandates is important.
Listeners, we welcome your questions about the Delta variant, anything about vaccines and children or vaccines and young adults and vaccines and senior citizens or anything else relevant for Dr. Lena Wen at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or tweet a question at Brian Lehrer. Dr. Wen, I got a question the other day from a listener in his 90s vaccinated in January and asking if he'll need a booster shot soon, since July is 6 months, and some people say it could be that soon that immunity weakens. I told him you were coming on and I would ask you. So what would you say to that 6 month vaccinated senior citizen?
What I would say that is that right now all the data point to immunity lasting for quite some time. We don't know exactly how long it lasts, but it should last well beyond 6 months and probably into years. There are some exceptions. So people who are severely immunocompromised, for example, may already need a booster shot. And in fact, there was just a paper that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine pointing to the effectiveness of a third booster shot for people who are recipients of organ transplants on immunosuppression, that a third booster shot could really help to increase their immune response. However, for everybody else, our immune system, there are more and more studies that indicate that our immune system remains very robust, because it's not just about the antibodies. It's also about these memory B cells that could produce antibodies very quickly if we are exposed to COVID-19. Now, those studies are still ongoing about when people are going to need booster shots. You'll need boosters under two circumstances. One is if immunity does appear to wane. Again, right now for generally healthy people, it does not seem that that's the issue with the vaccines we have. Two is if there are variants that arise that may make the vaccines less effective, and maybe we need a specific booster to target those variants. Right now, the vaccines that we have seem to be effective against all the variants of concern that we know of. That said, the CDC, the FDA, they're actively evaluating their circumstance, and I would imagine that the people who are most likely to need a booster, other than people who are immunocompromised, are going to be older individuals. However, that recommendation has not yet come. And for the time being, I would say 6 months later, even a year later, very likely your immune system still is very robust against the variants of concern.
Is there any way for an older person to tell how robust their immune response or their immune system is, to know if they are, you know, individuals who would benefit from a booster shot?
Yeah, this is a really good question that I get a lot from patients as well. People want to know, well, is there a blood test that I can get? And usually they're thinking about the antibody test. Here's the problem, though. The general antibody test is not actually measuring the neutralizing antibody that we're looking for. And so you could have a negative antibody test, but actually you could have plenty of robust response, because even if you don't have the antibody at the ready, you have these memory B cells that are capable of producing the antibodies very quickly. And so I would say if you're generally a pretty healthy person, you should not be getting a test in order to look for your immune response.
You mentioned the J&J vaccine a minute ago, and we have a question about that coming in from Ethan in Brooklyn. Ethan, you're on WNYC with Dr. Lena Wen. Hello.
Okay, guys.
Oh, there you go. Now we got you. Go ahead, Ethan.
Hey, Dr. Wynn. Hey, Dr. Lehrer. It's good to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call. So, I was curious about the efficacy of getting a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine after I got the J&J 3 months ago, and just the concern about the Delta variant how J&J works against that got me thinking maybe I should just also get one dose of the Pfizer or the Moderna. Is that a good idea? I'm seeing online some people doing that.
Yeah, this
Dr.
is...
Dr. Wen. And by the way, I'll say that I think Ethan was just being cute, but I am not a doctor. I only interview them on the radio. But Dr. Wen, go ahead.
I was going to say, I haven't been calling you Dr. Lehrer this whole time. But to Ethan's question, actually, this is something that I think about a lot, of course, as a physician advising my patients, but also as an individual myself, because I received the Johnson & Johnson one-dose vaccine. And here's what we know about the J&J vaccine. We know that if you're only going to get one dose of a vaccine, you should get the one-dose Johnson & Johnson, as in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are meant to be two-dose vaccines. One dose, for example, of the Pfizer vaccine is only about 33% effective against the Delta variant. So you should be getting both of those vaccines. But if you got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it does appear to be less effective against mild to moderate disease than the mRNA vaccines. Probably it's very effective against severe illness. And even though we don't have the exact data about Johnson & Johnson and the effectiveness against the Delta variant has a lot in common with the beta and gamma variants, which the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is very effective against. So should you be getting a booster shot at this time of an mRNA vaccine if you got the Johnson & Johnson one dose? Right now, CDC and FDA and other health authorities are not recommending this. However, there was a study that came out this week looking at mixed vaccines. So individuals who got the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is similar to Johnson & Johnson, it's also an adenovirus vector vaccine, they found that if you mix one dose AstraZeneca with one dose of Pfizer, that you do get a robust response. So could there be a recommendation coming out about people who got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? It's certainly possible, and I would say even likely. That is not the recommendation now at the time. Now, I will just add one more thing here, which is I hope that the CDC is tracking these so-called breakthrough infections better. Breakthrough infections are what happens if you are fully vaccinated and then get COVID-19. The CDC a couple months ago decided to stop tracking mild cases of breakthrough infections. They're only tracking severe cases that are severe enough to cause hospitalization or death. I think tracking mild cases is actually important because if you find that people who got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine have a much higher likelihood of having breakthrough infections, that would indicate that it's time perhaps to think about a booster shot. I'm not sure what type of tracking the CDC is doing in this regard, but I think they should do a lot more so that we get the answers to the questions that Ethan and I, frankly, as a patient have as well.
Your Washington Post column saying development of a COVID vaccine for young children should be an urgent priority. How young and how urgent?
Well, my point in writing this article is I keep hearing this untrue misconception that somehow children, well, don't worry about kids. Kids don't get sick from COVID, they don't spread COVID, and so let's not focus on vaccinating children. That's just not true. The premise is not true, and therefore the conclusion is not true. To be clear, right now, we only have vaccines approved for children 12 and older. And so I'm talking about getting the research done so that we are able to, at some point, have safe and effective vaccines for children under the age of 12 that currently is not authorized yet. But let's look at the data, because it's just not true that children do not get sick from COVID-19. Since the beginning of the pandemic, more than 4 million children have been infected with COVID-19. More than 400 have died. Tens of thousands have been hospitalized. More than 4,000 have had this multi-system inflammatory syndrome that is very frightening, could occur in previously healthy children, could even occur weeks or months after the infection, including with mild illness. And I make the point of this column that it's a mistake for us to compare the severity of illness in children versus adults. Because let's imagine that COVID-19 was a disease that only affected children. Of course, that's not the case. But hypothetically, imagine those same numbers that I gave you just a minute ago applied, but it only affected children. Parents would be terrified. We would all be saying, we want to do everything we can to protect our children. And so it's just a fallacy, I think, to say, well, if children tend to not get as ill as adults, then it doesn't really matter in children. I believe that we really need to get our children vaccinated to protect them, including against unknown, potentially long-term consequences of contracting COVID-19. In addition, this is a lasting problem, as in COVID is not exactly going away in the next months or even years. And so we need to get our kids vaccinated to protect for the longer term. And in addition, I can tell you as a parent of two young kids, almost 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, my husband and I are not returning to our pre-pandemic lives until our children are also vaccinated. And so having the vaccines approved for children when they are found to be safe and effective is going to be really important.
That was one of the most interesting parts of your column to me, and I want to ask you to elaborate on it, that you and your husband will be reluctant to return to your pre-pandemic lives until your kids are vaccinated too. So in what ways for yourself have you returned to your pre-pandemic lives, and in what ways are you not?
It's a really good question. I'll tell you how I and my husband are thinking about this, understanding that other families are making very different types of decisions, and that's all okay. The people who are fully vaccinated, I think there is a wide spectrum of what we are deciding to do when it comes to our own risks. For me and my husband, we are generally healthy. We are now vaccinated. If it were just us, I don't think we would have a lot of limitations on what we would do. But right now, we are concerned because we live at home with two unvaccinated children. We then are taking additional precautions, as in there is still the potential that we could become infected. We'll probably be mildly symptomatic, if symptomatic at all, but we could still, in theory, be able to transmit it to our unvaccinated children. And so we will, for example, do anything outdoors. We're happy to socialize even in large groups outdoors. We'll also be happy to be indoors, including unlimited numbers, maskless individuals with no social distancing, if we know that everybody there is fully vaccinated. However, if I'm going to a crowded grocery store, to crowded church service, to something else indoors where other people around me are probably unvaccinated and unmasked, I am still going to be wearing a mask. I am not going to go to high-intensity exercise classes indoors in a packed gym where other people around me are breathing heavily and unmasked. I mean, these are the choices that we're choosing to make at this time. We're also choosing right now to not travel by plane with our children because our one-year-old is unable to be masked. Now, I understand that's very conservative, and some people will say that's too conservative. That's fine. People are making the choices that are best for them and their families. But I give this example because I think many parents are choosing to be careful at this time. And here's the reason why, and this is, I think, the ultimate reason why a vaccine for young children, when it's researched and authorized, is going to be really important. Because even if the risk of an adverse outcome to our children is low, there's still that possibility. And I think for many parents, if we can reduce the chance of something, of a horrible thing, from low risk to essentially zero risk, I think all of us, or at least many of us, would do that.
And Alex in Greenwich Village, you're on WNYC with Dr. Lena Wen. Hi, Alex.
Hi. I'm wondering if your guest knows whether vaccinated people who have had mild COVID cases are susceptible to the same long COVID symptoms that unvaccinated people who have had mild or asymptomatic cases seem to be having. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I get this question all the time, Dr. Wen.
I agree. I get this question a lot too, and I don't think that we have the data to be able to say definitively one way or another. One would imagine that, just based on common sense, that if the vaccine substantially reduces your likelihood of illness, full stop, and then reduces your likelihood of severe illness, that probably, just logically speaking, it would also reduce the likelihood of your having mild illness that then leads to long-term, long COVID symptoms. However, I don't believe that we have those information. I will say anecdotally, I have not heard about the large numbers of individuals who have long COVID symptoms after having mild infection. But again, this is another reason why having that kind of documentation from the CDC would be important, because it's now we know for certain it's not just severe illness from COVID-19 that we care about. It's also mild illness. I mean, there was a study of nearly 2 million individuals who were diagnosed with COVID-19, and they found that a quarter of all those individuals, regardless of whether they had severe or mild COVID, by the way, this was pre-vaccination, so these are individuals who got COVID, were not vaccinated, but a quarter of them, within 1 month of their COVID diagnosis, went to visit their doctor for something other than COVID, for a new symptom that was probably because of their COVID, but was not just because of their COVID. For example, mm-hmm. they had new muscle pain or loss of concentration or fatigue. All this is to say COVID is a disease that we really do not want to get, including in children.
You know, on the young children, Mayor de Blasio here in New York announced a stat on this show last week that the positivity rate in New York City public schools is now 0.03%, 0.03%. Is that an argument against urgency for kids, or maybe an argument for managing institutions with children, like schools, in certain ways that maybe they're doing well in New York City?
Look, I actually don't think that the incidence of COVID is what should determine the whether we offer vaccines for children. We haven't had a case of polio in the U.S. since the 1970s, but my child, my children, and I'm sure almost all the listeners' children, your children probably all got the polio vaccine. I mean, the entire point of having childhood immunizations is to prevent diseases from occurring. Frankly, also, we're not going to be able to reach herd immunity as a society unless our children are vaccinated too. And children can also be reservoirs of the disease who can transmit to others. And so I do think it's great news that New York City and many places around the country, there are enough adults vaccinated that you have been very successful in reducing the rate of COVID-19 in the community. That's great. That makes life safer for everyone. That does not mean, though, that children should not be getting the vaccine.
All right. Last question. Do you have an opinion about whether things are reopening too quickly in this country? Like here in New York, we're having a ticker tape parade to celebrate the essential workers, marking the end of the pandemic, at least as we've known it, a concert in Central Park to do same for 60,000 people, outdoor stadiums reopening at full capacity with no proof of vaccine. Broadway is reopening indoors so far with proof of vaccines. What do you make of the mix of reopenings and requirements?
I really understand that people want to get back to life as normal, but the pandemic is not over. And I think, you know, I actually would be okay with anything taking place outdoors and anything taking place or anything taking place outdoors full stop and anything taking place indoors where there is proof of vaccination or recent testing. But when you have large numbers of people gathered indoors in poorly ventilated areas of mixed vaccination status with this very contagious Delta variant floating around, that's a recipe for disaster. And I am very concerned that we are going to see upticks in many places of preventable infection. And so I just hope that there is a way for us to put the genie back in the bottle, as in I really hope that public health officials and officials in general are they understand that if we see upticks, that there is going to be the necessity at some point, and it may not be this summer, but it may come this fall, where we will have to reimpose indoor mask mandates. And I'm not sure that everybody is ready to hear that message.
Dr. Lena Wen, you can see the columns of hers that we've been talking about in the Washington Post. And her forthcoming book is called Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for Public Health. We will talk to you in August when that book comes out, or maybe even before. Dr. Wen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.